This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. Whenever I start or before I begin with this dua. And the reason why I always begin with this dua is because it's the dua that Musa alayhi salam, Moses, said before he went upon and basically took on a very, very heavy mission. And that mission was that he was given the job of approaching the greatest tyrant to walk the earth, and that is Pharaoh. And before he went to take on this heavy task, he made this dua, this supplication to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, رَبِّ اشْرَحْ لِي صَدْرِي, O my Lord, expand my chest. You know, sometimes when we, in life, right, we have difficult tasks. We all have gone through things where it's difficult. And we know we have to do it, but it's difficult, right? I'm sure all of you have taken some exam recently where maybe you felt that way. Or anything in life that's difficult. And before taking on that task, you sometimes feel like your chest is constricted. And so this dua is actually asking, the beginning of this dua is asking for Allah, for God to expand his chest. رَبِّ اشْرَحْ لِي صَدْرِي وَيَسِّرْ لِي أَمْرِي, and make my matters easy for me. The thing about matters, the thing about everything in life, in fact, is there is another supplication that we are taught. And in this supplication is a very, very profound truth. And that profound truth is this. Allahumma la sahla illa ma ja'altahu sahla. That, O God, there is nothing that is easy except what you make easy. This is actually a very, very important concept. Because a lot of times we believe that things are either difficult or easy based on the matter itself. But in fact, that isn't true, and I'm going to prove that to you. The reason that isn't true is you'll find, and I don't know how many of you have experienced and how much you've experienced of this, but if you observe the world, you find that there are people who seem to have very comfortable lives. They might have luxury and money and power and ease, and yet internally they aren't happy. Internally they don't have that satisfaction. That they are not actually able still to handle their lives. In fact, some of them are maybe suffering from very, very serious depression. And we might look at them and say, but I don't understand why they have this and they have that. They have these eases, things that we define as ease, right? Money, luxury, convenience. Some of them may be famous, right? We know a lot of these kinds of stories, that these celebrities, for example, that have fame and money and power, these are the things we run after, right? A lot of us. Now, they have these things, and yet they are not happy, and some of them even die from suicide or drug overdoses. So the question becomes, well, wait, what's missing here? And then you look at other people, people from third world countries, people who don't have the luxuries, that the things that we consider, the good things in life, they don't have those things and yet they have contentment. So then the question becomes, what exactly is it that makes a person have ease in their life, and what is it that makes a person have difficulty? And when you really study it, what you find is that ease is only what God makes easy. And it doesn't have to do with just what's happening in your life, because there are people who have very, very difficult lives and yet internally they're content. And you know, one of the most powerful personal examples I've had of that is a friend of mine who I met a few years ago. And some of you who have heard my old podcasts know about her story, but some of you may not. And she's a woman who inspired me tremendously, and she ended up inspiring many others with her story. But basically, she's a woman who had her first child, and when her first child was around, I think, 3 or so, the school called her and told her that her daughter had just stopped talking all of a sudden. So she wasn't really sure why, and eventually she took her daughter to the doctor, and the doctor told her, after some tests, that her daughter had a very rare genetic disorder called MPS. And this disorder is such that, basically, this is what the woman is being told. She's being told that your daughter has this rare disease and she will slowly lose all her faculties. She will slowly lose her ability to talk, to walk, to even swallow on her own. And that eventually she was told, you know, don't expect her to live to the age of 13 even, or even into her teenage years. This is what this mother is being told. And then a few years later, she had another daughter. And she started to show similar symptoms. And she was taken to the doctor, and the doctor told her, your second daughter has the same disorder, MPS. And subhanAllah, she had a third daughter. And the third daughter, she was told, had the same disorder. So now she had, and within the community, and you know, they have like support groups, and within that community of parents with children who have MPS, I don't know that there is another family that has more than one, let alone three children who have MPS. And then she had a fourth child with severe autism. So she had three children. One of her children recently passed away a few months ago, subhanAllah, well into her teenage years. She was told not to expect these children to live that long, but her children and the amount of care that she gave her children for almost 20 years. But why I'm telling you this story isn't actually to make you upset, but it's what I learned from her story, and that is that here she is, this woman that is in a situation that I couldn't even imagine, I couldn't wrap my mind around it. And yet, one day when I met with her, she told me a phrase that I never forgot. She said, quote, I'm drowning in gratitude. She said, I'm drowning in gratitude. And to me, that just blew my mind, because she's in a situation that, you know, like you and I couldn't imagine. You know, if I tell you what her life is like, because I've visited her many times, and literally she does what five nurses couldn't do. And in fact, if she has to even just step out of the house for an hour or two, she has the amount of like difficulty and the amount of help she has to hire, it's unbelievable. And it's all done just by her. Mashallah tabarakallah. The oxygen tanks, they got to a point where, I mean, they like long before they couldn't walk anymore, they were in wheelchairs. But there was something else that she told me, and that is that they came to a point where they couldn't swallow their own saliva. And you know, a lot of us, this is something that we take for granted. Every few seconds we're swallowing our saliva. We don't pay attention to it. But the ability to swallow your own saliva actually keeps you from choking to death. You understand? But we are not even conscious of these things. And you know, how many of us are saying Alhamdulillah every single time we swallow our saliva? And yet this was something that was, because they were not able to swallow their own saliva, they were choking on it. And she would have to like suction them. And so just these small things that we have and we take for granted. And yet this woman, and why I was so inspired by her, is that this woman was saying she's drowning in gratitude. Now how is something like that possible? And that to me was a sign. It was a sign of God, really. Because how is it possible that someone who has money and fame and ease and health, and yet is not happy, and yet is not happy, is not satisfied, and someone who has this type of trial and is saying that she's drowning in gratitude, that in and of itself is a sign of God. And what it's a sign of is that it's only the help of God that allows us to either be drowning in gratitude or drowning in despair. And so I always begin by asking, Rabbi Shrahli Sadri wa Yassirli Amri, and make my matters easy for me. And you know, this is the words of Musa alayhi salam, وَحْلُلْ عُقْدَةً مِنْ لِسَانِي, and take the knot out of my tongue, يَفْقَهُ قَوْلِي, that they may understand my speech. So that's how I begin I want to talk today about this concept of guidance. When I think about our journey through this life, it's very much like any other journey. And you can liken the parts of this life spiritually with, you know, basically what you need to go on any kind of journey. The Prophet ﷺ advised us in a hadith, "Kun fi dunya ka annaka gharib," be in this life as if you're a stranger or a traveler. And one thing that you find, you know, someone like myself who travels a lot, one thing that you find that when you do travel, there's a certain state that you're in when you travel. And many of you have experienced this when you travel. There's a certain state that you're in when you travel. And I'll give you some examples of that state. When you go to a hotel, because when you travel, you're not staying at home, right? You're staying in a temporary lodge. And when you go to a hotel, how attached do you become to your hotel room? How attached do any of us become to, you know, the desk in our hotel room? Or the bedding? And moreover, if we don't like something about our hotel room, I've been to many hotel rooms where I didn't like things about it. Maybe you don't like the decor. Maybe you don't like the color or the feel of the bedding. Maybe you don't like the pillows. The pillows are always awful. But how upset do you get that you don't like that aspect of your hotel room? Do you go and now start, you know, a revolution against the, you know, the hotel chain? And my question to you is why? Why do you not get so attached to your hotel room? And why do you not make it the end of the world that you don't like certain things about it? Anyone?
Temporary.
Because it's temporary. Simple as that. In your mind, you're saying, you know what, I'm only here for a few days. So it's not that big of a deal, right? Now, if we apply that to our journey through this life, then you can understand the advice that the Prophet ﷺ is giving. He's saying that be in this entire life like that person in a hotel room. Yeah? So there are going to be things in this life that you don't necessarily like. There's going to be aspects of your life that aren't perfect, right? Yes or no? And there's going to be things that you do love, right? But the idea is, how can you be in a state where it's balanced in the sense that you don't get too worked up when things don't go your way? And at the same time, you aren't so attached that when you have to leave, you're not able to. Make sense? Or when you have to let go of things. You know, vehicle is, in this journey back to Allah, our vehicle is dunya. That dunya itself is the vehicle that's taking us back to Allah. How do we use dunya to take us back to Allah? That's how we should look at dunya. Dunya is this life, right? If I look at this life as a vehicle, I'm going to interact with it very differently than if I look at this life as the end in and of itself. You know this attitude called YOLO? What's the attitude called YOLO? The attitude called YOLO is, you only live once, and therefore, see, because there's a therefore, right? What does it mean? It means you only live once, so do whatever you want, live it up, maximize pleasure, whatever, right? So the idea is, because this is all we have, then we should try to use this life, what? For this life, for the sake of this life. We're not using this life to get us somewhere after this life. YOLO is the attitude that you're just trying to maximize the temporary time you have. Make sense? That attitude is very, very different than the one who believes that this life is only a vehicle. That it's a stepping stone, that it's taking us to another higher life, inshallah. So knowing that the concept of dunya and how to use dunya, and also understanding the nature of dunya is important. Because if you're going to use this vehicle, you need to know a little bit about it, right? Just like a car. You need to know at least the bare necessities, like at least something about the car in order to be able to use it for your journey. You need to know where's the gas tank, you know, how to turn on. I know like minimum about my car, but I need to know these things in order to be able to use my car. All right. Now, what are the things we need to know about dunya? One of the things we need to know about dunya is that it wasn't created to be perfect, and it wasn't created to be permanent. That's very important. Now, that might sound kind of obvious. Well, we already knew that. This life is temporary. But it's not so obvious, because a lot of people live in this world as if it's permanent. A lot of people live in this world as if it's supposed to be perfect. Do you guys understand what I'm saying? Like, it's very, very difficult to accept, for example, that we're going to age, right? That's why there's so many products out there, multi-billion dollar industry, to sort of try to hold on and have, you know, these ageless creams, right? Because we want plastic surgery. I mean, I live in Southern California, you know, and in this industry of plastic surgery and, you know, all of these different ways to try to hold on to something that wasn't intended to be permanent. But we want to turn something that's by its nature temporary into something permanent. And that's going against the nature of this life. No matter how hard you try, and no matter how many various kinds of plastic surgery you engage, you know, that you have done, you're still never going to live forever in this life. And eventually, no matter how much Botox you use, eventually you will age. But see, that's hard for people, that's hard for us to accept, because we want this life to be perfect. So understanding the nature of this life is very important in mastering it. Like, you gotta master your vehicle, you know what I'm saying? If you're gonna use it, and if it's gonna take you where you wanna be, you gotta master it. You can't let your vehicle master you, right? Like, your vehicle isn't driving you, you need to drive it. So understanding that, and it's not that it's temporary and that it's imperfect. One other thing I want to add in that regard is that although this life isn't perfectly good, it's also not perfectly bad either. And what I mean by that is, no matter how much hardship a person has, and no matter how much difficulty a person has, they also have many, 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 many things to be grateful for. At the same time, they have been given many blessings. Everyone on this earth has both difficulty and blessing. Everyone on this earth has both difficulty and ease. It never comes in just ease or just difficulty. Make sense? It's a mixed bag. Yeah? This life is always a mixed bag. You're never going to have it all good or all bad. And a lot of it just has to do with your outlook. So even when things are very hard or very, very difficult, it may look to you like it's all bad. Okay? But actually it isn't. That there are many things in your life that are blessings, but you're not seeing them, or you're not focused on them. And that's what distinguishes one person from another. That's what distinguishes my friend Tayyiba, the one that I just told you her story. That's what distinguishes someone like her, may Allah make all her matters easy, and someone else who has everything, but they're complaining because, you know, they're in a traffic jam. You understand? That it has to do with how your outlook and what you're seeing and what you're focusing on. But every single person has both. Every single person has both ease and hardship, has both blessings and trials at the same time. And that is the meaning of inna ma'al usri yusra. Inna ma'al usri yusra. That with hardship comes ease. Eases. And in fact, the word is plural. So in the verse itself, in the ayah itself, Allah has used the singular of hardship and has used the plural of ease. Yusra, inna ma'al usri yusra. So Allah is telling us, even in the grammar, that for every hardship you have many eases at the same time, along with it. They come in packages, they come at the same time. So this has to do with also how you master the vehicle of dunya, and if you want it to take you to your destination, right? Number three is that whenever you're on a journey, you need to be aware of the pitfalls. You need to be aware. You know, if there's construction ahead, there's a sign that tells you. If there's a pothole or, you know, a major speed bump, that you know that these things are coming so that you can handle them, right? So in the same way, in this journey spiritually, we have to be kind of aware of the pitfalls. And when you're aware of the pitfalls, then you can master them and be able to basically cope. All right? Coping becomes easier when you're aware of the pitfalls. So what are some of the pitfalls? One of the biggest major pitfalls on this journey is the obstacle or the pitfall of despair. Of hopelessness. Now what I mean by that is when we make a wrong turn in life, when we slip, when we fall, okay, when we get to a point, a low in our lives, okay, what happens at that point is some people will despair. Some people will give up. But doing that is like, you know, you're driving and you make a wrong turn, you miss an exit, you did something wrong. How many of you, when you make a wrong turn or miss an exit, just pull over, turn off the car, and say, that's it. That's it. I'm done. Like, I made a wrong turn. I'm done. I'm not going anywhere. That's it. You know what? I'm not even ever going to drive again. Like, who does that? Anyone? Exactly. Nobody does that. Why? Because making wrong turns is part of driving. And when you make a wrong turn or you miss an exit, guess what your GPS does for you?
Rerouting.
Simple as that. And it will keep rerouting over and over and over. And it never gets annoyed at you. Right? Does yours get annoyed at you? It doesn't change itself. Rerouting. You know what I mean? It's a robot. But the point here is that when you make a mistake, you make a wrong turn, you miss an exit, you don't give up on the path. You don't give up on driving. You keep going and you reroute. And that's what has to happen in life. You're going to make mistakes and you're going to take wrong turns and you're going to slip and you're going to mess up because that's part of the journey. You understand? The same way you know that it's part of driving, you should know that it's part of this journey. It's part of the life journey. Now, you're going to make mistakes. And when you do, you can't give up on driving. You have to keep going. Can't give up on the journey. All right. Something else about driving. And that is, see, in the car, there's this thing called a rear view mirror, right? Okay. What's the purpose of a rear view mirror?
To look behind.
To show you behind. Simple, right? You guys are awesome. 100%. That was like a pop quiz and you all aced it. The purpose of the rear view mirror is to show you what's behind you, okay? Let me ask you guys a question. What would happen if a person who's driving spends too long focused on the rear view mirror? They're gonna crash. You guys see what I mean? I don't even know why I'm up here. They're gonna crash. And you know what? In life, it's the same way. It's the same thing. A person who stays too focused on their past, too fixated on their past, you know what happens? They crash. And the reason is they're not looking forward. They're not looking at where they need to go because they're stuck in what's behind them. And so one of the biggest mistakes we make is we spend too much time focused on the rearview mirror. All right? Now, can you completely do away with the rear view mirror? Not really. Because why? You need it for reference. And you know what? There was this quote that I read recently, and it says that your past is supposed to be a place of reference, not a place of residence. So the idea here is that while we need the rear view mirror, but you can't keep fixated on it. Why do I need the rear view mirror? You guys all very astutely told me so that you can see what's behind you. But you need to keep your eyes on the... You need to keep focused on the road and what's ahead of you. You only look at the rear view mirror for reference to give you an idea what's behind you. But you have to look quickly. This is the same thing with our past. We cannot become fixated on our past. We have to learn from our past, but we have to keep focused on our future. Make sense? Fair enough? And one of the tricks that Shaitan will use against a person, and this is part of despair, by the way, is if you've had a rough past, if you've made a lot of mistakes, or you've been through a lot of pain, one of the best ways to paralyze you, one of the best ways to chain you up, is to keep reminding you of your past. to keep repeating it, like put it on repeat, like a broken record. Why? Because every time you keep repeating it and repeating and repeating, it's like chains around you, and you can't move forward. And that's the idea. See, if a person looks and just keeps looking at the rearview mirror, they're going to crash because they don't know where they're going forward. So keep in mind that this is something you have to struggle against. Getting stuck in your past and allowing your past to define your future. Makes sense. Now, your past, again, everything you've been through in life, yes, it happened for a reason. And yes, it's intended to teach you something. So learn the lesson, but move on. Don't get stuck. And just always remember, and you guys are never going to forget this, because whenever you drive, you're going to look at the rearview mirror and you're going to be like, I can't stay fixated on it. And that, inshallah, will remind you that in the same way, you can't stay fixated on your past. You look at it, you learn from it, and then you keep going, and you go back and you focus on where you're moving to. No one should ever allow whatever kind of past they've had to define their future. It can teach you, but it should never define. And I can tell you, you know, one of many, many examples, but if you look at some of the greatest companions, for example, some of the greatest companions to walk, you know, those promised Jannah, look at Umar radiallahu anhu, and you realize if you looked at their past, you know, they didn't always believe, and in fact, Umar radiallahu anhu was against the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And so when you think about, but then what did he become, right? You look at, you know, contemporary Malcolm X, right? Think about his past. He ended up in jail. And yet, what was his future? So the idea of our past defining our future should never be something that you allow to happen. But you learn and you keep going. Now, finally, what I want to say is this. If I'm driving, I'm checking, you know, I'm conscious of my vehicle, I know where I'm going, everything's in the GPS, awesome. I'm rerouting, I'm not giving up, I know the pitfalls. But then I run out of fuel, I run out of gas, and I don't know where to refuel. Then what's going to happen? Well, it doesn't take a mechanic to know that you can't move without, your car's going to stop, right? So part of the journey for you to be successful is you have to keep the car fueled. You have to keep it fueled. Similarly, I'm going to say this is the same thing spiritually. You need to have your spiritual fuel. And guess what? It does run out. Just like the gas in the car runs out eventually, your spiritual fuel needs to be refilled. It does run out. Just like food. You eat. Yeah, no one says, okay, I don't need to eat today because I ate last October. It doesn't work like that. You need to consistently keep eating. And part of the spiritual, and so for you to be successful in this journey, you have to have a source of consistent spiritual fuel. Sometimes spiritually we go through these highs and these lows, right? Now, while the spiritual path has highs and lows naturally, but when a person gets to their low, if they don't have a source of fuel, then that's when a person gets lower, 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 lower until they crash. And once they crash and the car just, that's it. And doesn't move anymore. So be conscious of your refueling. I'm going to sort of wrap it up here by saying this. What is our spiritual fuel? What is it? You know, once in a while we'll come to lectures or maybe we'll read a really awesome book like Reclaim Your Car. Seriously though, sometimes we'll do these things periodically, right? But what is our daily fuel? What is our daily fuel? This is extremely important. There is something that the Prophet ﷺ said will be the first thing we're asked about on the Day of Judgment. It's our salah, our prayer. Why is that? Our salah, our prayer, is literally like our oxygen. And it's something that you can't just do once in a while, right? Nobody in the world says, you know what, I'm busy today, I have an exam, so I'll breathe tomorrow, right? You gotta keep breathing to stay alive. And it's the same thing with our prayers, with our salah. So the salah itself is one of the most essential parts of that fuel, to keep us going. And sometimes what happens is when we are in whatever, In whatever way a person starts to give up or go off track or turn off their car and just give up, it usually is rooted in some sort of abandonment of salah. In some sort of, like, that there's something deficient in the prayer. Either a person is not praying anymore, or they're not praying all their prayers, or they're praying very late. That when the salah gets affected, everything else gets affected. Does that make sense? And that's just because, just like the human body, if they're not getting enough oxygen, it's going to affect every other part of their body. It's going to affect all their organs. And that's simply because a body, in order to function, it needs a certain level of oxygen. Make sense? So spiritually, for us to function, we have to have our salah in order. And obviously, that is the very bare minimum, which is 5 times on time. That's just your oxygen. That's just keeping you alive. And now beyond that, there's other kinds of fuel, such as the connection to the Qur'an. Having a regular relationship with the Qur'an, the Book of Allah. And any kind of remembrance of Allah is fuel. Any kind of remembrance of God is oxygen. So think of it in that way, that the same way I have to keep my body oxygenated, I gotta keep my car fueled, I have to continuously remember Allah. And it's not something I do once and I'm done, right? It's something I have to continuously do to stay alive, right? So that's how it works with the remembrance of Allah. Finally, let me just say this. There's something that I personally discovered. I mean, I've been sort of trying to be practicing throughout most of my adult life, I'd say, yeah? So since I was a teenager. But there was something that I wasn't regularly doing, and when I discovered basically the power of this one thing, it really changed a lot in my life. And that is the adhkar. And what I mean by the adhkar is that the Prophet ﷺ had this habit that every single day in the morning after he prayed fajr, he would say certain supplications. They're called the adhkar of morning, of sabah. And then every day after asr, he would say certain supplications, which are the supplications or the adhkar of masa, of evening. And then before sleep. Now the Prophet ﷺ, if you study his life, you find that he was always remembering God. Like there's a supplication for everything you can imagine under the sun. Right? There's a supplication for leaving the house, there's a supplication for coming into the house, supplication for eating, finishing eating, going to the bathroom, leaving the bathroom, putting on new clothes, starting to drive, you feel me? There's a supplication for everything. And there's a reason why. What the Prophet ﷺ is teaching us is how to be in this life involved, right? He didn't just go away. He didn't just become a monk. He was married. He was a father. He was a teacher. He was a friend. He was a politician. He was all these things. And yet, he was always remembering God within these roles. So our deen, our religion is one of balance. It's not one that tells us the way to be spiritual is only to just live in the mosque. You understand? That the spirituality that we're taught is something that you do while you're driving, while you're walking, while you're a student, while you're a wife, while you're a husband, while you're a father, while you're a mother, while you're a teacher, while you're a cop, you get it. So it's something that you do within your dunya roles. It's not something you do on the side. It's not something you do on Friday, right? It's not just something you do once a year or once in Ramadan and that's it. It's something that we're taught to do throughout our lives and throughout our roles. That's what Islam is. It's a practical religion that teaches spirituality within the dunya roles and within the dunya action, the things that we're doing in dunya. So when you start to live these sunnah, like this sunnah of remembering Allah in your different worldly action, it transforms your life. It transforms your state, it transforms how you interact with people and with your life in general. But one thing I'll tell you this is specifically the adhkar of morning, evening, and before sleep personally absolutely changed my life. And whenever I told others about it or I prescribed it to others in my classes or just, you know, it personally, it also, people found that it absolutely changed their life. So these are just, honestly, this journey that we are on, it's not intended to be impossible. It's not intended to be so hard Allah does not want us to fail. Allah wants us to succeed. But we just have to be conscious of certain things in that journey. Know your destination, know your vehicle, know the pitfalls, and then know how to continue to keep that car running. أَقُولِ قَوْلِ هَذَا وَاسْتَغْفِرُ اللَّهِ وَلَكُمْ إِنَّهُ غَفُورُ رَحِيمٌ سُبْحَانَكَ اللَّهُ بِحَمْدَكَ أَشْهَدُ أَنْ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا أَنْتَ أَسْتَغْفِرُكَ وَأَتُوبُ إِلَيْكَ. So I don't know if there's time for Q&A. Yes? No? Maybe so? Okay. All right. I was also considering doing a short book reading, like an excerpt from my book, but I won't. I'll put that off for a second, and I want to take questions. But really quickly, I do want to just kind of give you guys an idea of why I wrote Reclaim Your Heart and what it is. So Reclaim Your Heart is about this idea of the journey that we go through life. And in that journey, we give our hearts away. See, everybody in this life, whether they're a Christian or a Jew or an atheist or an agnostic, they give their hearts to something. You know, whatever it happens to be. Some people it's money, some people it's status or fame or power. But what Reclaim Your Heart is about taking the heart back and giving it to God. And how doing that helps you be successful within your human relationships and within your work and within your everything that you do in this life, and how to be successful in that journey. So let me go ahead and actually open it up for questions. I think we have time to take a few questions.
If you want to ask a question, just come over here.
Okay.
Set up a stand.
Or I guess you can just raise your hand as well. Inshallah. So when you want to try to improve your salah, what are some ways to try to improve your salah? First of all, I will tell you there's courses, like I know Sheikh Abdul Nasir Junga had a course that where he meaningful prayer, all about khushu'a and how to improve the quality of our prayer. But just generally, one of the best ways to improve the quality of your prayer is simply to understand what you're saying. Just to understand what you're saying. Because see, if I'm communicating with a friend or a spouse or a parent, and I don't even know what I'm saying, I'm just saying, you know, words in Chinese, and I have no idea what they mean, I'm not going to be very invested in that conversation or involved. And my connection to the person I'm communicating with won't be very strong, because I don't even know what I'm saying. Right? So understanding the meaning of salah at the very basic level is really, really important. Regardless of whether Arabic is your first language or not, you can still learn the basic part of salah, the meaning of it. What is Subhana Rabbi al-A'la, Subhana Rabbi al-Azim, Sami Allah ibn Hamid, just understanding that. The other thing is, you know how I was saying about the afkar, the supplications? The more that you remember Allah outside your prayer, the easier it is to remember Allah inside your prayer. Make sense? So the problem sometimes we face is we don't think about Allah at all day. We're thinking about everything else. You know, our business or our Facebook or our exams or this. And so once you start praying, you're just going to think about the same exact thing you've been thinking about all day. But if you can sort of slowly institute more remembrance of Allah outside of Salah, then you'll be able to naturally have more remembrance inside the Salah. And it'll be easier to focus. Another thing is just not being rushed. And one thing that's also I found to be really helpful is praying towards the beginning of the time rather than the end. It's so much different. And for brothers, like praying at the masjid, that also is a huge difference in terms of khushu'ah and reward. But like when you pray towards the beginning of the time, it's a lot easier to focus than like the first 10 minutes or the first 30 minutes versus the last 30 minutes. It's like the difference between day and night. So those are just some things. You know, being in a quiet place, obviously things as much as possible, removing distractions. Yes?
It's not really a question, I just want to kind of add on to what you were saying before. When you're distracted as well, it oftentimes comes from shaitana, and know that you can spit three times.
And then during the salah, so you're asking. Okay, continue.
Okay, to my understanding.
Yeah.
If there is a distraction during salah, and you know, oftentimes comes to shaitana,
So during the salah, if you get distracted, so you're asking what should you do if you're getting distracted?
No, I was just adding on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so the thing is, when you're getting distracted in the salah, the best thing you want to do is refocus. Just refocus and then keep trying. The thing to keep in mind about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not expecting us to be perfect angels, but we have to just keep trying and to do our best not to give up and to keep trying. So ask Allah to help you keep doing, try the things that I mentioned, understanding what you're saying, taking out. Another thing that many people have found helps is having a few moments before you start to sort of clear your mind. You know, nowadays they're finding just even the power of meditation. What is meditation essentially? It's clearing your mind. It's clearing it out so that you're actually, like, mindfulness is actually being able to just to actually clear. So just practicing that, even praying sunnah will help you focus in your salah, interestingly enough. And that's because usually, like, say you have a sunnah before the salah and then you have the fajr, you've already sort of gotten, you're into the exercise, right, of the spiritual exercise. So by the time you're praying you're more conscious. So that's another thing. Anyone else? I think in the back.
With the GPS, we have an easy way to reroute. So I'm kind of asking, when you're at that point where you feel like you need to reroute, how do you know what way to go? I mean, you don't have a clear direction on that makes any sense. So, like, if praying is istikhara, people say sometimes you get dreams, but how does that really work when making a decision? So how do you reroute and how do you know, the right path?
Right. That's a really great question. So how do we reroute? I you mentioned one of the best ways in order to seek guidance. Obviously, there's salah, du'a, and specifically istikhara. Istikhara is a du'a that we ask Allah for when we're making a decision and for Allah to guide us. And you mentioned dreams. See, it's sort of a misconception that we believe that the answer to istikhara always comes in a dream. Because if you actually look at the meaning of the istikhara du'a, and you just look at linguist, like what you're actually saying, you'll find when you break it down, you're not asking for a dream. You're actually not even asking for a sign. What you're actually asking for is for Allah to facilitate what is best. You understand the difference? That's totally different than God give me a sign, a bolt of lightning in the sky. That's not what you're actually asking for. Essentially, istikhara is saying, Allahumma in kunta ta'laman hadha al khayrun fi dini wa ma'ashi. So if this thing is good for me in this life and the next, faqdirhu li wa yassirhu li thumma barik li fi. This is what you're asking. You're saying, if it's good for me, then make it happen, make it easy and put blessing in it. That's what you're asking. And then you're saying, if it's not good for me, فَصْرِفْهُ عَنِّي, then take it away from me. وَصْرِفْنِي عَنْهُ, and take me away from it. وَقْدُرْ لِلْخَيْرِ حَيْثُ كَانْ تُمْرْدِنِي بِي, then bring me what's good for me and make me pleased with it. So if you think about what is it that you're really saying in istikhara, you're saying, Ya Allah, take the steering wheel of this of my life, of my situation. Does that make sense? So you're praying istikhara, say, about a job or a career or a marriage. You're asking Allah, you're putting your trust in Allah and saying, Ya Allah, do what's best and make it easy. And if it's not good, then take it away and replace it with whatever is good. So sometimes the answer to istikhara actually comes in what happens, in what's facilitated, or on the other hand, what is closed. Sometimes you pray istikhara about something and it's obstacle upon obstacle upon obstacle comes after the istikhara. You understand? So that's how, sometimes that's the answer to the istikhara. It's not, because if you look at the idea of dreams, that's complicated. I'll tell you why. Because there's three sources a dream can come from. Three sources. A dream can come from Allah. That's ru'ya. That's like a true dream. Mm-hmm. Or a dream can come from shaitan. Mm-hmm. Or a dream can just come from the nafs. Like, I ate too much ice cream, so I dreamt about ice cream. You know? And it's not like symbolic. So the idea is that you never know for sure about dreams. You never know for sure about dreams. So to make your, you know, decisions based on something you're not, you don't even know for sure what it means or what the source is, istikhara is asking Allah, take the steering wheel. Do what's best. Take away whatever is not good for me. And I can't emphasize enough what a gift that is. Asking Allah for guidance. You're saying when we reroute and we don't know which way to go, one thing that we really underestimate or we kind of put aside is the power of dua. You know, when I'm confused, the first thing I do when I'm confused is I go to this person, I go to that person, I go to this website, I go to that website. That's all great, but I've forgotten something essential, and that's asking Allah for guidance. You know what I mean? Sometimes we just forget, we step over dua and we go to every other means, but we forget about dua. We forget about asking Allah to guide us and for Allah to help us. And it's good for us to seek help from those who have knowledge. We should, but we shouldn't forget to ask Allah for guidance. I think I can take one more question. Yes. Yes.
So, when we look at the life of the Sahaba, may Allah be pleased with them all. And for example, if we look into the life of Abdullah ibn Umar, there's a narration that you, Stephen, bow down in a place where but there wasn't any tree anymore, but that Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is the passing day, who would bow down and do the same thing, even when the tree itself wasn't there. So people used to say that if they did not know this is Abdullah ibn Umar, they would start feeling this man has a psychological issue. The point being, at what point do you know that, okay, this ghulaba that you are kind of trying to fit into is within the realm of Islam, within the purpose of Islam? At what point do you know that, you know, this is really not Islam, this is just kind of going too much further?
Okay, yeah. It's a good question. His question is asking that sometimes we're going to be strange, right? The idea of being a stranger, there's another hadith that says, "Bada Islamu gharibu wa sa'udu gharibu kama bada," that Islam began as something strange, it will return to being something strange as it began. Fatuba al-ghuraba, give glad tidings to the strangers. But then at the same time, at what point is it like that you're being strange because you're inventing something, right? Or you're not part of it's not part of what's acceptable within the fold of Islam. And I mean, to answer that, we have to use a methodology. There is a specific methodology. You don't just go, you know, you don't just make it up. Oh, this is what I feel, right? Or I had a dream that told me to do this. There is a methodology in terms of how we live our lives and how we follow the Quran and the Sunnah. And we need to abide by that methodology. Of course, there's leeway in terms of, for example, which scholars you, and there's difference of opinion in fiqh, there's different schools of thought, that's fine. But there's still a methodology, and there's still a border, and we need to be within that border, within that manhaj and that methodology of Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah, of the Quran and the Sunnah. And so, as long as we're within that, it's okay that this person, holds their hands here, and this person holds their hands down here in Salah. That's okay. There are some differences within our deen that are acceptable, and that's fine. Even the scholars agreed to disagree. That's okay. But then, of course, there's things outside of that border, and those are the things we have to avoid. Our deen is not about following our hawa. It's not about following our desires or our own inclinations. I might think that this is better. You know, why? I mean, who knows? Someone might say, well, you know what? Isha is later on, and we're more tired, so I think it should be 3 rak'ahs, and Maghrib is earlier.